Hello, I'm Monsignor Jim Lasanti. Today on Personally Speaking, I'll be joined by actor and singer Lucy Arnaz. Please stay with us. Hello and welcome to Personally Speaking. I'm your host, Monsignor Jim Lasanti, and actress and singer Lucy Arnaz joins me now. Lucy began her career in a recurring role on television on The Lucy Show, opposite her mother, Lucille Ball. At 15, she became a series regular on Here's Lucy. She starred in her own series, The Lucy Arnaz Show, and later in the CBS drama Sons and Daughters. Lucy starred opposite Neil Diamond and Sir Laurence Olivier in the movie The Jazz Singer. Her other film credits included Billy Jack Goes to Washington and Second Thoughts. And she's starred in many made-for-television movies, including the cult classic Who Killed the Black Dahlia. Lucy also starred on Broadway in the hit musical They're Playing Our Song. And it was while she was on Broadway in that show that she met actor Lawrence Luckinbill, who was also starring on Broadway in another Neil Simon hit, Chapter 2. Lucy and Larry married in June of 1980, and together they are parents of three adult children, Simon, Joseph, and Catherine. Lucy is also the stepmother to Larry's two sons, Nicholas and Benjamin. Throughout her 50-plus years in show business, Lucy Arnaz has also helmed several different production retrospectives on the iconic fame of her parents, Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, including the Emmy Award-winning documentary called Lucy and Desi, A Home Movie, and the Emmy Award-winning CBS special called the I Love Lucy 50th Anniversary Special. Lucy tours the United States and Europe with her critically acclaimed nightclub act, and she's here with us today to talk about her life, her varied career, her marriage, her family, and the faith and the values that matter the most to her. Joining me now, I'm so pleased to welcome to Personally Speaking the actress and singer and dancer, Lucy Arnaz. Let me ask you something. We're doing this remotely, which is unusual for us. We usually do it from our New York City studio, but as you know, in New York, as around the rest of the country, with coronavirus being something that upends the whole world. I'm just wondering, Lucy, as the country and the world goes through this mess of a situation, are you able in any way to draw any kind of lessons about what we're supposed to take away from this unexpected and shocking crisis?
I hope so. I'm trying to. It's interesting because as soon as it started to happen, and it was affecting me personally because I was just embarking on all these dates that I had, concerts. I've been sitting at home for 2 months rehearsing and doing nothing, getting ready for March, April, and May, and then in June, and then in July, and then we saw this starting to happen, and I thought, oh boy, I got to do one gig with two shows, and then right after that I saw, oh, we got to cancel everything, it's all going to go. Yeah. And there can be a lot of fear in that, like, holy God, because last year I canceled them voluntarily because both of my children, two of my three children, were going to be parents for the first time. I didn't want to miss it. So I didn't have, I just canceled my dates. And then this happened. I thought, oh my God. But I decided early on that I wasn't going to look at it fearfully. I was going to embrace this virus with respect. And I said, I don't even know what that means, but I'm going to look at it with enormous respect because clearly it's a powerful force. Yeah. And I believe that we don't always know what anything is for. Mm-hmm. That's a kind of a quote out of A Course in Miracles. But it's not always that everything happens for the best per se. It's another way of saying that. But it's like we don't always understand what anything is for. And with that goes the assumption that things are for something. And look at what's happened. It's been tragic in many ways, but it's also brought people closer together, had them appreciate the value of their own life, made them stop for a second and stop running. It's cleared up the skies and the water, the traffic, the pollution. And where I live, it's insane. I haven't seen skies this clear since I woke up the next day after my cataract surgery, you know? It's like, wow. And I heard the dolphins are swimming again in the Venice canals because the pollution has dropped from the lack of boats and things. It's brought us hopefully together in the sense that we care about each other. We're not going to go places and we're going to stay our distance, not just for ourselves, but so we don't get other people sick. And, you know, there's been a lot of diversion in this country and divisiveness in the last 3 or 4 years. And it's broken my heart to see this little mini civil war that's been going on. And if anything, at least it's toned that down, you know?
Absolutely. Actually, Lucy, you've come up with many insights that we need to hear. I think one of the best is the indefiniteness of life means that we should seize the day and appreciate life more than we do. I've got friends now who have been tested as positive with the virus, and a couple of them are all people in their 20s and 30s and 40s, and they're saying, I thought I had forever. And this is a reminder that none of us knows if we have forever, which is a great perspective. It reminds me a little bit, I was in the city, like many people, on 9/11, and to see the capacity of people to start caring about each other. It happened then, and maybe it will happen now. You know, you're right.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a plague or a terrible disaster sometimes to wake us up. And there are a couple of wonderful videos that have been circulated. I put a couple on my website. I'm not on my website, but on my Facebook page, especially the one that says "A Letter from the Virus," and it was like the Earth is speaking to us in a very soft, feminine voice, saying, "I tried to warn you. The fires didn't do it. The earthquakes didn't do it. The floods didn't do it. You have to pay attention. We're melting. We're dying here. We're choking to death. Please wake up, people." You know, and I get that. And then there was another video that was simply a gratitude video where this voice was just saying, "Thank you for this," and making a list of all the things that had changed that we could be grateful for because of this. And I'm sure that that's what this is. I'm sure that it is.
And you've named a lot of them, which is good for us to consider. Lucy, on a more personal note, this is interesting to me, but, you know, as a priest, every weekend I get to do weddings, and one of the ways I try to preach well is by saying to the couple, "Look, I want to understand what you have seen in each other that would make you say, 'I'm willing to make this bet that this is a person I'm supposed to spend my life with.'" So they each bride and groom write me an essay on why this person of the billions out there is the one for me. Mm. You've got this long-standing marriage with Lawrence. Mm. What's he got that made you say years ago, "This is the one"?
Oh, my God. What a good question. And I love that you do that for people. You know, I had been married once before very briefly when I was very young, 20, and I had gone with a guy since I was 15. So he was like the only person in my life. And I realized it soon enough that I thought, this isn't right. I got married too soon. I'm not in love. I was just fantasizing a wedding, you know? And so Larry had been in a 12-year marriage with 2 children and that he was getting divorced. And I mean, we'd both been through various things and we came to it not wanting to even get into a relationship again, unless it was on a very mutual respect basis. And what I liked about him was that he'd never seen an I Love Lucy show, which I love. I mean, I guess he knew about it, but he was busy working at night in the theater and he didn't pay any attention to that. I mean, he knew who they were, but it was like, fine. So that was magnificent. He's the kind of person, he's real smart. I mean, he's very well read. He loves to read the newspaper. He's very literate. He's a wonderful actor. I fell madly in love with his performances on stage. I just couldn't wait to get on stage with an actor as good as he was. So there was all of that first. There was the fact that he's just real super cute and sexy first. But after I got to know him, he's such a good dad. He was a great dad to his 2 sons who were only 4 and 11 when I met him. And they were going through a terrible time with their parents getting divorced. And it was just the worst time in their life. And he did it so well. And he was the kind of guy that even when I was misbehaving or acting like a fool, getting angry for no reason, working through my own immaturities, he'd be the guy that would come back into the room and say, "Okay, look, I don't know what just happened. I love you. Can we fix this?" If it wasn't for that, I don't know that we would still be together, because I come from a family of screamers and door slammers, you know, and grudge holders. They don't do that sorry stuff. And right. so he's just been a really great force in my life on so many levels. He really, really loves me, and I don't know that I've ever known love like that before. So in the beginning, I ran from it a little bit. Like, mm-hmm. I really wanted, part of me wanted to be there and was smart enough to marry him, but then part of me kept trying to drift away again because it was too scary.
Yeah.
And then I lost my parents, and it got scary again mm-hmm. because I thought, yeah, you're going to leave. You're going to leave. Sure, you're 17 years older than me. You're going to die. You're going to leave. And because it goes through your head, and those other deaths were so painful that I was rough. It was a really rough patch there for a while, and I think that was it. That's why. But we made it through, mostly because of him, and it's as good as it's ever been now, 40 years. I know, it's insane when I think about it. The kid that was 11 is 50.
Like a remarkable relationship, and obviously he saw a lot in you too. It wasn't just you seeing all the good in him, but he thought you were worth staying and working it out with, which is a great testament to you.
I don't know. It just amazes me every day. And you know, I'm 68, going to be 69 years old, which blows my mind.
Right. Where did the years go?
It's nuts. How can this little girl be? And yet he still comes over to me and says, you are so beautiful. God, you're beautiful. I love looking at you. You know, who couldn't fall in love with a guy who does that every day? Just nuts.
We're talking here to Lucy Arnaz about her life, her family. And I got to ask you, too, which you knew a Catholic priest would ask you, how, I don't know the background. How were you taught faith, and where did it go through the years? And
Boy, is that a good question. That's a funny thing because my father was Cuban, so they're Catholic, right? And so when we were born, we were baptized Catholic and raised Catholic, although my mother really wasn't. And so my grandmother, her mother, is the one who took us to church all the time. Early on, in the very, very, very early years when my parents were still married, my mom and my dad would go to church with us, especially on Easter or something like that. But they got divorced when I was 7. So I missed a lot of that. And then we're at home and my mother remarried Gary Morton, who was Jewish, but not a really practicing Jewish, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He just knew he was Jewish, but nothing Jewish happened in our family except chopped liver. Chopped liver happened a lot. And one night I was sitting at the table with Gary and my mother and my grandmother, Dee Dee, my mother's mother, and we were talking about something about religion, and I turned to my mother, and I'm like 18 years old at this point, and I turned to my mother and I said, what religion are you? Like, I don't know. I can't believe I had to ask her that. And she turned to her mother and said, I don't know, Dee Dee, what are we?
Wow.
So there was we don't know what, she had not a clue. So I did not grow up with a lot of, we didn't say grace, we didn't talk about God. My dad was Cuban, but that meant he believed in God. He did. He would point to the stars and the rainbows and the sunsets and say, you see, that's God's handiwork. And he'd say, you know, when you get in trouble, you ask the man upstairs, you know, to get you, that, all those kind of, you know, cliche mm-hmm. type things. And yet, we didn't really live a religious or spiritual life at all, and very rarely went to church. And even when we talk about that first marriage,
yeah,
I was Catholic. I went to Catholic schools all my life, Catholic grammar schools, high schools, and I was going to get married. And my husband, we were going to go get married, and we lived in Beverly Hills, so we went to our parish. And the priest in the parish, we met with him and said, now, we'd really love to get married outside in my backyard. And he said, oh, no, we can't. You can't do that. I said, why? And he said, but we don't do that. You can't do that. You have to be married in the church. Thing. I said, but my girlfriend, Cindy, is Catholic, and she got married outside down in Carlsbad. And he goes, that's San Diego County. That's a different thing. And I said, wait a minute. What, does God have a thing in San Diego, but he doesn't have that? So that kind of pushed me away for quite a while. But then I got married, and I had the children with Larry, and he was raised Catholic, too. And so, of course, we, you know, baptized our kids, and they all went through First Communions. But then there were, like, weird things that happened with that. In the Catholic Church where we lived in Westchester, they were, like, weird, and they would yell at people if you were talking to one another while you were waiting for the ceremony to begin. You're just waiting for First Communion, and parents are going, hi, how are you? How's your family? How's your daughter? And everybody's not very excited, and they would come up to the podium, and they would go, excuse me, you need quiet in this church. We're being very disrespectful to the women. I thought, what? So I was starting to go, what is this all about? But then I discovered that what it is to me is that I don't care what the religion is. You could be Jewish or Catholic or Episcopalian or Protestant or whatever it is. It's spirituality. Do you believe that there is a God? Yes, I do. Do you believe it's bigger than all of us? Yes, I do. Do you believe there's a purpose in life and we should be kind to one another? Yes, I do. So then I kind of, I started spending, if I spent any time, I was at Unity Church in Norwalk, and a lot of their teachings are new thought teachings, and they're totally non-denominational. Everybody, you could be Catholic, you could be Jewish, you could be anything, you could be atheist. Well, no, you can't be atheist. I don't think you could be atheist, because we do talk about the power of God. And then I sort of found my way back to praying and to talking, you know, in about God and about prayer in a different way. And I found out that prayer is not necessarily something you memorize that has to be taught to you in a catechism. It's your communication with your higher self and with the divine spark, and that there is a divine spark in every one of us. Sometimes it's harder to see in certain people, but you work on that, you know?
This is quite a journey you've had. You know, you're reminding me as you talk, Lucy Arnaz is our guest, that John Paul, who's now a saint of the church, one of the things he did a couple of times was call all religious leaders to Assisi in Italy and say, and some people in the Vatican criticized him, saying, you know, you shouldn't do that, it waters down our faith. But his point of view was that every path to God is something worthy of respect, and that any time we can come together and find a unity, that it's a good thing. And I think that in some ways what this Pope Francis is doing, trying to say, let's not look at the differences, but rather the things that bond us together. I'm also, Stephen Schwartz, the great composer, he had done, obviously, Pippin, and he had done Wicked. But I said, why would you, as a secular Jewish man, write a musical called Godspell about Jesus? And he said, you know, you don't have to be Christian to know the world would be in much better shape if we actually took his teachings and lived them, you know?
There's some truth in that, right?
I got to ask you, as a non-parent myself, but I often wonder, when you've got values that you and Lawrence have, do you have any insight into, as a parent, how he's supposed to communicate to the kids the best of what you want them to learn?
Oh, my gosh. What a thesis question that is.
Yeah.
How much time have we got? That's a really rough question. And all my children are so, so different. What works with one doesn't work with the other. One is not like the other. I think what happens is that we're cyclical. Every generation sort of tries to undo what the previous one did. You know, it's like, well, my mother was very strict, so I'm going to be more of a friend. Oh, my mother was too much of a friend, I've got to be a much better disciplinarian, but I can't be a disciplinarian that, you know, smacks my kids. I have to figure out a better way to do that and talk to them. And every generation sort of tries to improve a little bit upon the previous generation. I don't know. I think probably I was afraid more to be too strict. I wanted to be a friend, and in retrospect, all these years later, I think I would have given up a little bit of that to be a little more of the taskmaster in a good way. But the sergeant voice, you know, like a good drill sergeant, a good boot camp sergeant, they want you to survive, and so they're going to be a little rough. But when you do survive and when you get out of there, they shake your hand and go, you know, buddy, I knew you always had it in you, you know. And I think I could have done a little bit better in that respect, because my kids had times, each one of them had ups and downs that were pretty scary. And, you know, I don't know how that happened. I really don't. I have one son who has a mental illness that we can't cope with it anymore. We've tried all we can do, but he isn't on the same planet as us. And I have another son that was, you know, when he was very young, dealt with so much stuff. He dealt with so much stuff. He had ADD, and he lost a couple of teeth to an abscess. So at a very young, impressionable age, he's walking around with no teeth in the front of his mouth when everybody else had teeth. And, you know, kids deal with what they deal with. My daughter was the youngest, and she kind of saw what happened to everybody else, and I think she sort of pulled her own self up by her bootstraps and said, Jesus, I better be careful. But then I found out years later that she went through all kinds of drugs and crazy sex and this, and wouldn't tell me, and I didn't catch on. How did I not see that? And yet she's real pulled together now. She's a great mom. God, she's a good mother. She married a fabulous guy. She's got her head together, and she helps me run our business. And my middle son, who had the ADD and all that stuff, is now a phenomenal musician and music teacher and a singer and a recording, producer, record producer. You know, he's a starving artist, but he does so many things so well. And the other two, my stepsons, are fantastic. One is a great artist and a writer, and the other one is a promoter, and he works in a big mm-hmm. business doing social media stuff, and he's got a really great head on his shoulders. So somehow, you know, and they had not a great relationship growing up with their mother at all. They don't really even speak to her, and they turned out like spectacular kids, and they weren't really they weren't as much my worry as they were hers, and their relationship with her is not as good as mine. So go know, as they would say.
Go figure, Lucy Arnaz.
Yeah, I don't know.
Lucy, let me ask you, because as we're talking about you and Lawrence in the parenting role, I would be unfair if I didn't say, when you look back, forget about any of the negatives in life, when you look back, what did your parents do right for you?
Yeah, they did a lot right. They really did. You know, considering that they had a big handicap by being famous and being not home because they worked. And any kid who has two working parents can tell you what that's like. That's rough. I was just thinking the other day how lucky my daughter is, because she works from home anyway. She works from home on a computer for Microsoft, and she can work from home with her baby, which is fabulous. But because of this quarantine, her husband is now also working from home. And they get to be with this new baby, who is now 10 months old, and watch such development happen with this kid.
Right,
you know,
right.
The little tiny increments, and it's just magical all the time when they're learning to do this, and now he can do this. And I said to her yesterday, God, you're so lucky. Do you know how lucky you are that you're getting to see this? Mm-hmm. I got to see it more than my mom, but my parents, to get back to your question, didn't have that kind of opportunity. They had great help, you know, very reliable, very loving people who raised us, but they didn't get that. So they had that handicap. But one of the things that when they did spend time with us, you always knew that they were really concerned about your well-being. And my mother was a strict disciplinarian. You know, did you do your homework? You know, and what are you going to do with that? And come on, it got bedtime. And I think because she felt bad that she wasn't there all day. But my dad, when he was around, when I spent weekends with him, he was great fun, you know, and he was the guy you could go swimming with and horseback riding with and fishing with. And he would sing, and he was just a tremendous host. But the best thing, they gave us some great advice without even meaning to, without ever saying it like, remember, I'm giving you advice, but just by osmosis. My father used to say, if you don't know what to do, don't do anything. And I used to laugh at him when he said that. He said, no, I mean talking when you get into a real problem and you really, really just don't know what to do. That's not that often, but you know, he said, that means you don't have enough information. So what it says is, don't stop right dead in your tracks. Don't do anything, because you're going to make a terrible decision. Go back and get as much. You got to ask a lot more questions. You got to look at it from different angles. And then when you think you know, you go ahead and don't let a mountain stop you. You just go barrel on through and do what you think you should do. And he said, and if you face it that way, and it turns out that it didn't turn out the way you thought it was going to, it looks quote unquote bad at the time, don't worry. You were meant to do that, and it's actually going to be good. Whatever happened is for a reason, and you're going to learn something from that. That's on your path. That's part of your curriculum, you know, in this lifetime. And my mother used to say things like, take care of Lucy. And when she said, she meant me, Lucy. Mm-hmm. And she meant, like, you know how they say, put your oxygen mask on first before you help your child.
Right.
She's saying, if you don't take care of your health and your mental health and get your rest and eat right, and you get sick, you have nothing. When you're sick, you got nothing. Like the whole country is sick now, right? And we got a lot less because of that. We had to shut down. And that's what that was really great, great advice. And she also almost always said to me, you can do anything you want. You're capable of anything. Don't let anybody tell you that you can't do something, because you can do it. Oh, honey, I don't know how you do that. Oh, my God, I can't believe you can do that. Wow, you can do everything. I mean, that's great. And I thought that was just normal. I thought all parents said that, but apparently not. Apparently there are a lot of parents who say, what, are you crazy? You can't do that. You're not handsome enough to do that, or you're not smart enough to do that, or, you know, that's a terrible thing to say to your kid. With all of the divorce, there was divorce, there was anger, there was alcoholism, there was sarcasm, there was a lot of negative stuff I could write a chapter about. But in the long run, they gave us good tools, you know, mm-hmm. to defend ourselves in the universe, and that's a good thing.
I want to thank Lucy Arnaz for this interview, for her time with us, and not just talking about her career as an actress and singer and all the rest, which is amazing. We have a mutual friend, Bradley James, who says, you know, some people, as they get older, become diminished. He said Lucy Arnaz just gets better and better as she goes. So she's this talented public person. But
Bradley,
I think today we've learned that she's also a person of great insight into the journey of life, the meaning of life, how to find new meaning in our families. To go with the positive and celebrate that positive. I thank you, Lucy, so much for being with us and for being so open, so honest. You are an absolute delight.
Thank you, Monsignor. I really, really appreciate talking to you. It was really fun for me, too.
As we end today's program, I want to thank you all for being with us today. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can go to our website, which is www.closeencountertv.com. closeencountertv.com. Personally Speaking is also a podcast with some of our most recent shows. You can go to YouTube and search Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti and subscribe there. We'd love to have you be a subscriber to Personally Speaking with Monsignor Jim Lasanti on YouTube. Personally Speaking is also available as a podcast on Apple Podcasts, on iHeart, and on Spotify. You can also listen to past episodes by going to, once again, www.closeencountertv.com and clicking on the radio button at the top of the page. And additionally, Personally Speaking episodes are on www.ollmp.org, where you'll not only get our past shows, but also Monsignor Jim's weekly homilies. I'd like to tell you that I'm privileged to serve as host and executive producer, Personally Speaking. Our producer is Lisa Jandovitz. Our engineer is Chris Wallach, and our audio facility is Dream Recording Studios in Belmore, Long Island, New York. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with you again next time on Personally Speaking.